This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. Duke University freshman Lucas Metropol is the kind of guy who likes to help. He volunteered in soup kitchens, has grown food in community gardens. Now, at the ripe old age of 19, he's leading his own volunteer organization. When he was just 15, Lucas' parents challenged him and his siblings to do something for their community. Lucas' love of fishing led him to start Fishing for Families in Need. Lucas began in his hometown of Boca Raton, Florida, by collecting old fishing rods. Then he taught underprivileged children and families how to fish. And he teamed up with fishing tournaments to provide fresh fish to soup kitchens. Now Lucas is inspiring others to do the same. Fishing for Families in Need has spread to Louisiana, Massachusetts, and right here in North Carolina. Lucas Metropol joins me in the studio to talk about the program and its future. Lucas, welcome. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
When did you first get involved in community services in general?
Okay, well, since an early age, my parents have all motivated me and my five siblings to partake in community service, whether it be volunteering in a church activity or at a soup kitchen, as you said. And all my siblings, they all did some sort of community service program. And so at an early age, I was introduced to community service, and I helped them out in each of their projects.
What did they say about why you should get involved?
My father is a Greek Orthodox priest, and so he was raised around giving back to the community. And they just, both of them are raised that way, and both of them said that you should try to make some sort of difference in the community, no matter how small or how big it is.
So what led you to use fishing as your way of making a change?
Well, every year I go and visit my friends in Nassau, Bahamas, and there every day we go fishing. And then the excess fish we have, we bring it back to their farm, and then there's a poor area next to their farm on the island, and we take the fish and we give some of the fish to the poor people on the island. And so my friends there taught me a lot about fishing, as well as they imparted on me a greater appreciation for the environment, for the marine ecosystem. And so coming back to the States, I was trying to think of something I could do to make a difference in the community. And I thought, well, what am I good at? Well, I can fish. Okay. Maybe I can do something with that. So that's how the program was actually born. So.
If life hands you a fishing pole, so tell us how the program works.
So how it works in South Florida, where I started it, was that I had 8-week sessions, and it was one day a week, every Tuesday from 3:30 to 4:30. I would go to an aftercare center that services underprivileged children in the South Florida community. And through the aftercare center, I would teach them along with volunteers from 6 area high schools, a few universities, and I would teach them different skills from tying fishing knots to why we need to protect sea turtles, why we need to protect sharks, and different things like that. In one class, we even had a sushi class. Then through the donations, through acquiring grants, I was able to take them to a sea aquarium, deep sea fishing, International Fishing Hall of Fame, a lot of different activities.
And is most of the fishing you do deep sea fishing?
It's both. I'm teaching them because they are all low income, from low income families, and so they aren't able to acquire a boat. So I've teached them shoreline fishing mostly.
And ecology, you've mentioned it a couple times now, is an important part of what you teach.
Yes. I teach them to be ethical anglers, which means that I teach them not to just go out and catch fish and waste it. If you're going to catch fish, catch it and eat it so the fish have some sort of purpose. And also to just abide by all the regulations in whatever state you live in, and different conservation methods such as different materials you can use to fish.
And then talk about the related species that are all part of this ecosystem. Mm-hmm. The fish isn't here if the plankton don't feed the whales that come by and all of that.
Of course.
How much of this is centered on actually generating food, bringing food home to families?
The other aspect of the program I haven't talked about is that I would go to local fishing tournaments down in South Florida, and I contacted them and said, would it be possible to bring volunteers to your event and take the fish and fillet it and give it to the soup kitchen? And they all really liked the idea. So I traveled to around 3 tournaments down in South Florida. And I acquired their fish, and with it, we were able to give about over 750 hot meals to the soup kitchen. So that's the other aspect. And I teach the kids, the main aspect of it is not so they can provide for the families. It's so they gain new skills like patience and perseverance. And they also could possibly have a future job out of it. And
what kind of jobs are you?
Well, you could be a fish warden, which is someone who enforces regulations. You could be a deep sea fisherman. There's many different jobs.
But how many kids have you – well, I guess it's through high school?
Through high school.
Through high school. So how many people have you worked with? So
down in South Florida, around over 100. And now that I'm spreading it out, my past volunteers have all moved on. One of them goes to Tulane University in New Orleans, Samantha Stern, and she's going to start the program in the spring there. And then one of my past volunteers moved to Martha's Vineyard, and he will be starting the program in the spring there. And then I'm hoping to start the program in another location in South Florida, and I myself have started the program here in Durham and hope to grow that.
Now, so. Do any of your kids get so good at fishing that they cut school just so they can...
No, I don't think so. But they all really enjoy it, and sometimes I let the kids repeat the class to make their skills more firm, because with the repetition, they develop better skills. And so all the kids really enjoy it and always come back to it.
So you're teaching kids to play hooky and be held back.
Of course.
Fantastic. This is – we need much more of this. Talk about the people who have – your students who have decided to go on and spread. What is it about this program that they like and makes them want to share the program and start a program of their own?
Okay. Well, it's not just the kids – both the kids we teach benefit and the volunteers benefit. The volunteers really enjoyed the program, just how it was set up, the fun they had, the interaction they had with the kids. For them, it wasn't them giving like $10 to a charity. For them, they actively came out and interacted with the children, and with that, they felt more fulfilled.
You have 100 students now. You're going to start in Louisiana, Massachusetts, and here in North Carolina. Where are you set up in North Carolina?
Well, first, on October 22nd, I took a group from the Ronald McDonald House. It was different than what I normally do with my program because I actually took out the parents. All of their children are receiving treatment at the medical center. And I thought it would be a nice thing to do where I could take the parents out and just give them some sort of stress relief in their troubled life right now. And they all really enjoyed the fishing. And my hope is to, in the spring, start with the Boys and Girls Club. I'm contacting them right now, so hoping to set it up there.
And where do you go?
I took the Ronald McDonald group to Lake Mickey, and we fished there. There's a great amount of fish. Everyone caught a fish and had a good time, and we're all with each other having a great time.
Where do you get your funding?
My funding for programs in Florida comes from an organization called Fish Florida. It's a nonprofit that gives money to people who teach conservation. And since I teach conservation in my program, they've given me over $7,000 in funds for the past 3 years. And then other funding is coming from private donors. So,
And what about your brothers and sisters now? Or your siblings also sort of came up through this system because your parents encouraged this kind of behavior. What kinds of things have they done?
Well, they've all been very active. And my oldest sister is 30 years old. And throughout their lives, they've been very active in community service. They each started, the two older than me, they both started a program. And those programs, they tried to pass on. However, there just wasn't that right person to take it over. And so their programs kind of faded away. But still, through their lives in college and graduate school and even after, they've been very active in the community.
What does it take to reproduce this in terms of volunteers, space? If you wanted to start this, what would you need to start up?
Well, basically, the program's always in need of sponsors so that we can continue to grow the program. Both financial and if you're fishing rods, anything. And so basically I have everything set up, the lesson plan and just general knowledge of how you should teach it an effective way. And then all I need is responsible either teenagers or college age students who would like to take the program over. And you don't have to be near the water. You could be near a lake. You could be anywhere, really.
Have there been other programs like this? It seems to me that one of the interesting aspects of this is that you're engaging the outdoors. You're really working in nature and trying to understand it deeply. And certainly hunting and fishing, you become – I mean, that's a kind of communion when you take a fish or you take an animal, respect it, and actually make it part of your life. I know there are people who feel otherwise about hunting, but for those who are serious about it and treat it respectfully, it's a deep communion with nature and with the land. And is that something that you try to stress in teaching the program?
I've had people ask me before, like, how could you teach kids to go out and deplete the oceans? Well, I don't teach them that. I teach them to be responsible anglers, to only take fish if you're going to eat them. otherwise put them back, and to also practice different methods so that when you catch a fish, you won't damage the fish and you can release him into the wild.
And can you, I mean, what do you teach? You talked about teaching knots and kind of mm-hmm. working with the equipment. Mm-hmm. Can you teach me to be a better fisherman?
Yeah, of course. We teach them casting with a casting net, with a fishing rod. One class we show them how they can prepare the fish. We teach them how to make sushi in one of the classes. And as I said, with the field trips back in South Florida, I would incorporate a local nature center and take them there. And we'd go out with a large net in the shallow waters and try to collect different small organisms and look at them so the kids could get a better understanding for the animals that are out there and the animals that they need to protect.
Can you imagine other nature-based programs that could spring from this? That you said, look, I love fishing. What can I do? I can fish. I'm going to teach that. Mm-hmm. People who like hiking, camping, all of that sort of thing. It seems to me those are natural outgrowths of this mm-hmm. kind of a program.
Yeah. I mean, fishing is such a simple hobby or sport, yet it can actually make a large difference in people's lives. So,
have you seen that happen? The individuals who really have turned it around?
Yeah. I'll tell you one story. When I first started my program, it was actually the second week of the class down in South Florida, and I had an older gentleman come up to me. We were practicing casting on the aftercare center's playground, and he came up to me and he said, "Excuse me, are you running this program?" And I said, "Yes." And he's like, he just picked me up and squeezed me, and he was like, "Thank you so much." He's like, "You keep doing what you're doing." He told me later that when he was younger, he was in and out of juvenile detention, and that afterwards he was actually involved in another sort of fishing program. It was called Hooked on Fishing, Not on Drugs, down in Miami area. And afterwards he joined that, and he said that kept him out of going back. He said mm-hmm. if it wasn't for that, he'd probably be in prison.
You have trouble with the kids just not wanting to handle the bait? And
Not really. I was surprised, even because in South Florida, most of the kids were actually girls, and I thought the girls might not want to touch it, but it was actually the girls jumping on it, like, "I want to put the bait on. I don't need help putting the bait on." So,
now, why do you think there were mostly girls in the program?
I don't know. I was surprised, and half the girls were actually better than the guys. And,
yeah, well, that's not surprising.
Yeah. But, and the guys were like, "What?"
So then they get competitive,
yes.
and they want to beat them,
yes.
and that's how they get good. So what does the future hold for the program?
The future holds, I plan on spreading it throughout the country, as I said, and right now I'm looking for people anywhere in the country, any community, any town.
How do you do that? What's your outreach plan?
Different contacts that I have, friends mm-hmm. in different cities around the country, tell them to try to find someone or maybe teach the program themselves.
What does the program need? What do you need to keep it going and to expand it?
To keep it going, we're in need of more donations, financial donations, as well as in the locations where we start, we're going to need more fishing supplies and different things like that.
So, what do your parents think of this?
My parents, they're very proud, and they thought that I was just going to start the program and maybe let it fade away. But I really love the program that I started. And really love what I'm doing, and will continue to do it.
What are you taking at your going to Duke? You're doing your undergrad there.
Yes, I'm right now. I'm thinking about majoring in public policy with a minor in econ, and a certificate in marine leadership and conservation. I hope to do pre-law. So it's a lot.
you're going to be busy this semester.
Yes.
Will this, do you think, be part of your future? Will you stay engaged in this kind of activity, even if it's not this particular program?
Of course. I feel like I will always have this program and always try to grow it throughout my life. I'm hoping to do that.
What made you choose Duke?
Since I was at an early age, I remember when I was younger, I watched a Duke basketball game. Just that, I was like, wow, that team is good.
Can you spell Krzyzewski? Yeah, it's okay.
I thought about it for a while.
Luke, you've done quite enough. You don't have to do that. Thanks so much for being on the program.
All right, thank you.
Lucas Metropoulos is the founder of Fishing for Families in Need. It's a program that takes children and adults fishing. It teaches them about conservation. Donate some fish to local soup kitchens. And if you want to know more, you visit f4fn.com. So that's f4fn.com, and you can find out more. That's our program for today. Thank you for listening. As always, if you want to comment on the show or hear an archived edition, go to stateofthings.org. You can find a link to a calendar of events, including information about our upcoming visit to Greensboro. State of Things, going back to Greensboro this Thursday, November 17th. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage. And we're going to present a story slam. It's a competition hosted by the Monty. You could be on the air with your story, but you have to be in the audience. So if you're in the audience, we pull your name out of, and if you so choose to tell a story, we can pull your name out of a hat. You can be part of the Monty Story Slam and part of our program on Thursday from Greensboro. If you'd like to tell a story, email your RSVP to rsvp@wunc.org, and you can be part of our program this Thursday, Upstage Cabaret at the Triad Stage in Greensboro. We're going to be there live. We'd love to see you there as well. Our program was produced, as always, by Amber Nimix, and Susan Davis is our senior producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the managing editor. Alex Granados, our producer. And today's program was produced by our intern, Ginny Mueller. Ginny is here for the last day. It's her last day on the show. We're going to miss her warmth, her hard work, her ready smile. We wish her luck as she travels the gluten-free world of cookies and cakes. She's introduced me to gluten-free, and that's the only part that I will say I won't miss about Ginny. But good luck, Ginny. Thanks so much for being with us, being part of the show. Thank you for listening. This is North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.